Joining us on the line now is David McComey. He's a safecracker, like a character in a Hitchcock movie. Dave travels the country breaking into bank vaults, cracking jewelry store safes and decoding unbreakable codes secured deep in government facilities. He's never been arrested or charged with a crime because it's his job. His book, Safecracker, is a chronicle of the coolest job in the world. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. And I have to admit, I've interviewed thousands upon thousands of people over the years, and I've never interviewed a safecracker before, so I'm very excited.
We're making history.
We are, exactly. And I understand you wanted to become a safecracker at the age of 15. How did you even know about it at the age of 15?
I was absolutely fascinated by Alexander Mundy. He was a jewel thief in a TV series in the U.S. called It Takes a Thief in the late 1960s. And I was just taken with him. He was tall, dark, and handsome, and he got all the ladies, and he was just the coolest cat ever. And just coincidentally, my neighbor lady lost the keys to her house in her car and had to have a locksmith come out, and I couldn't believe it. I watched this guy, you know, pick locks and change keys, and I was absolutely fascinated. And he was just the nicest man. And he invited me down to his shop. So my parents started to drive me back and forth, and one thing led to another, and here you know.
Gosh.
Here I am 50 years later.
Yeah. So it's a real craft to learn then. You really had to study it, learning it all.
Oh, yes. Yeah, very much.
So what kind of studying do you need to do for it?
Well, it depends where you are on planet Earth. Here in the U.S., most of our safes are controlled by combination locks or electronic locks. And across Europe, you guys tend to favor key locks much more than we do. So when you're going to study, you need to know what the predominant usage is in your area. Mm-hmm. So here, we would want to study combination locks, and over where you are, you'd want to study key locks more.
Yeah. So is the idea that the more you study it, it's the fact that you can, I don't like the expression break into, but effectively break into safes and banks and things like that. You're able to get into places that people can't.
Yes, we are trained to look for vulnerabilities, weaknesses in designs of keys and locks and safes and vaults. And once you do this for a number of years, it actually becomes kind of second nature. You can look at a boltwork design on a safe or a vault and pretty much figure out how you would attack it. But so, it does take time.
Yeah. And how, I mean, presumably criminals will really want to know you and want to understand your skill set and even pay you for information. Has that ever happened?
Oh, yes. I run a club for safecrackers, a technical support club. It's a forum, actually. And we have guys all the time trying to crash. And the one thing that is required for entry is that you must be actively engaged in the trade or we won't let you in.
Mm-hmm.
And we have guys all the time trying to sneak in and pretend to be in the trade when they're not. But we can sniff them out.
Yeah, I bet. And I know many years ago, decades ago now, you were writing a column, monthly column on safecracking for the National Locksmith magazine. I didn't even know there was a locksmith magazine. Is there that much information then to go into a magazine?
Well, that magazine had a long life, almost a century, but it went under here a couple of years ago. Trade publishing has been hit very hard by the internet, and the magazine, my beloved magazine, Locksmith Magazine, went under.
Oh, shame.
But there still is another one in the States that's going strong. So,
okay.
All is not lost.
And again, I imagine every day is very, very different for you and has been over the years. But what would a kind of typical day look like for a safecracker?
Well, I'm hard of hearing, so I don't normally do the phone. My regular accounts locally here know to text me or to email me, and I'll wake up each morning and have a few emails and texts to sort through, and I'll contact them back, and they can explain the job and maybe send a photo or two, and and I'll just start figuring out how to route the day. Because you want to be efficient. You don't want to go from point A to point B and then back to point A. You want to make it a nice circle in your work day.
And in your book, Safecracker, you're kind of taking people through one crazy week, and all the things that you had to do in this week is quite incredible. There was a vault in Vegas with a midnight deadline. Tell us about that.
That was a vault. It was at Bank of America's currency center outside Las Vegas. It's where all the money comes in and gets routed through. And they had overwound the time lock. And they had to get in the same day. Well, that's extremely rare. It's very rare for a bank to insist that I come the same day and get the vault open, especially when I have to jump on a plane. But that one was, it had a midnight deadline or they were going to be in the penalty big time. So I accepted the job and booked a flight and just headed to Vegas as quickly as I could. I was really fortunate that Diebold Incorporated here in the United States, they're the only nationwide service provider for banks and credit unions that have safes and vaults and what have you. And they've just been very good to me over the years, and they call and they always have excellent techs to work with. So the guy that I was working with in Las Vegas, his name was Mike Hitchcock, or Hitch for short. And thank goodness Hitch is a driller, because I came prepared for the wrong vault. I came to Vegas expecting a very thick vault that needed long drill bits, and I didn't bring very many short ones. Turns out that we misidentified the door, and it was a much thinner but much more difficult door to drill. So all of a sudden we needed short bits. Well, thank goodness Hitch had a box of them, so we were able to get that vault open.
Yeah.
But had he not been an experienced guy with Diebold, we probably wouldn't have made the deadline.
So a lot of the time when you're getting into a vault, it's not necessarily about cracking the code, or is that often the case?
That's a good question. It depends on the particular example there. There are really four cases here. In the first one, people have gotten a safe and the combination is lost. They bought it at an auction, or their grandfather or father died and he only had the combination. The second example is when someone has the combination, but the safe won't open. Something's wrong. Something has malfunctioned. The third case is where a burglar has tried, and they come in and they take hammers and punches and oxyacetylene torches, and they make a big mess before they go home with their tail between their legs. And then we have to overcome what they've done. And the fourth and final scenario is just user error, or malfunction of the operator, as we sometimes refer to it, where someone has forgotten how to dial the combination, or they have inserted the key wrong, or in the Las Vegas example, they overwound the time lock. And that's really it. Either a lost combo, or something's wrong, or a burglar has made a mess, or it's a malfunction of the operator.
And if you do need to crack a code, as it were, I mean, I know this is not going to be able to be explained in 2 minutes or whatever, but how do you go about cracking a code?
Two ways, really. We either manipulate it, which means using our senses, mostly sight, hearing, and feel, to detect where those tumblers are, or we drill a tiny hole and use medical optics to view the tumblers. Either way works great, and we go back and forth from safe to safe to safe and mix the methods up. But there isn't one way that works on everything. We have to have a variety of techniques.
One of the other things you had to do was meet a mystery man from the Department of Defense at a remote location to crack two high-security safes. Where was that then?
That was in Southern Oregon here in the States, and I was never sure, really, what that gentleman's position was or what he was doing there. I was requested by the military to just ignore him, which I did. I never knew what was going on there. It was a bizarre job.
Yeah.
But it was all legit. It was all on the up and up.
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course. You had to tackle a 100-year-old antique bank vault in downtown Salt Lake City. Could you tell it was 100 years old? I mean, did it look really, was it rusty?
It wasn't rusty, but it was quite obviously very old. We don't make any full automatic doors anymore, but we did 100 years ago. We did make doors that don't have dials on them, don't have bolt work handles. They're just a plain front, and it's called a full automatic, and they are a hoot to work on. A hoot, not really. See, the problem here is that on a normal vault or a normal safe, we have a dial and we have a handle, and we can use those things to help us determine what the problem is. But in the case of a full automatic, there's no dial and no handle to play with. So we can't really troubleshoot. You have to make your best guess and go for it. And in that case, all of my guesses turned out wrong. And the very last possible thing that it could have been, it was. And I barely made the flight home.
Oh, wow. And also, I mean, this sounds like a fascinating job, but you went to Prince's home, Paisley Park, and had to get in his music vault. Was this after he died then?
Yes. He passed in April, and in May, the following month, I went to Paisley Park to open the vault there. It was a very sad occasion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And with all the different jobs that you've done, you must have seen some fascinating things inside these safes and vaults.
Well, it's pretty much the same. It's drugs, money, sex toys, bearer bonds, and coin collections. It's pretty much the same half dozen major items we see in safes.
Mm.
Although most of the time, the truth is, your safe cracker won't even look. We do it so much that we don't even really notice what's inside.
No.
Unless it is so jarring as to command your attention.
Yeah. So are you kind of sworn to secrecy when you get a job? Do you have to sign something that says, you know, you're not going to say what you've seen?
Sometimes, yes. NDAs are not real common. But I've signed a few over the years, yes.
Mm. So was it fun putting this book together, reminiscing about some of the weird and wonderful jobs you've had over the years?
It was a blast. It was weird the way it came to be. I proofread a book. I got a call out of the blue from an author named Steve Hamilton, who's written a bunch of very popular books, and he asked me to proofread a book he had written called The Lock Artist, about a deaf mute who's very talented and can crack safes and pick locks. So I did. And he kept bugging me to put pen to paper and put the stories down. So I did and found an agent, and he sold the book. It was really an amazing process.
Yeah.
But it never would have happened had Steve not contacted me to proofread that book, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. It never would have happened.
Mm. So has it made you want to write more?
Actually, it has. Yeah, it was way more fun than I thought it would be to write the book. It was a blast.
Yeah. So you, more nonfiction you think you'll be writing?
Well, actually, my first idea is for a philosophizing safecracker in a novel.
Mm. Yes, I like
it. The original book was called The Agnostic Safecracker. My interest philosophically are in arguments for the existence of God and theodicies and what have you. And I had much of that interspersed in the book. And my agent said, no, let's pull that out and use it for a future book. So that's what we did.
Yeah. Wow, I think it sounds fascinating. It's a great idea. And I also host a book show where I interview authors of fiction novels. So when the book is published, it would be great if you could get back in touch and we'll do an interview on the book show.
Oh, absolutely. That would be a blast.
Fantastic. Well, in the meantime, if listeners want to get a copy of Safecracker, it's on our website, tre.radio, in the bookshop section. And it's by David McComey, who we've been chatting to today. Dave, thanks so much for joining us and good luck with it all.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.